You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about finding connection with nature.
Sometimes an experience touches us in ways. Along Memorial Day weekend, writer Ron Weber witnessed a doe mourning the loss of her fawn, causing him to reflect on the similarities and connections between humans and nature.
Though sunny weather was forecast, my Memorial Day weekend plans did not include picnics or fishing. Yard chores and planting the garden was my fate. Pulling in the driveway Friday after work, I saw my neighbor had cut his first crop of hay. That aroma reminded me of the plethora of sights and smells that make this month of rebirth such a joy, and how much even we humans live with the rhythm of the seasons. Just after supper, as I walked towards the garden, I saw a deer in the field. With deer so plentiful, I never gave it a second look. Finishing my task an hour later, I saw the deer had not moved. Then I knew. Rising just after dawn, the deer was my first thought. I went to an upstairs window, hoping for an empty field. That hope was dashed when I saw a deer walking close to where I had seen it the evening before. I watched the doe walk through the field searching, until I couldn't watch anymore, so I distracted myself with breakfast. Working around the yard, I paused often to look in the field. Each time, there she was. Though often in the area I had first seen her, she also walked the perimeter and through the field searching, and I surmised, hoping. I was still hoping, too, when about 1 p.m., an eagle circled twice and glided to a landing 10 yards from the doe. It took a couple short hops and began feeding. The doe looked on as the eagle feasted. There was no denying my own sadness now. The eagle fed for a bit and took wing. The doe approached with her head low, and there she stood. As dark crept over the field, she was standing near where the eagle had fed. Call it instinct, dedication, love, whatever it was something to behold. A restless night of sleep followed. In the morning, I rose and headed for the window. I saw a large animal I thought at first glance was a wolf. Instead, it was a big coyote enjoying the spoils. The doe was standing 30 yards away. She sidled in until finally the coyote would have no more. It feigned a charge which sent the doe running. It returned to feed for another 5 minutes before racing towards the woods. The doe made her way back, and there she stood. That evening, I helped my wife prepare a new flower bed. Carrying weeds and sticks to the corner of our yard, through a gap in two spruce trees, I saw a deer 20 yards away in the field. Our eyes locked. I still recall what I saw in those eyes. It was sadness. Was it just the doe's, or a reflection of mine as well? I'm not sure. I tossed my load under the spruce. The doe never moved. I dropped my eyes, turned, walked away, and never looked back. Darkness mercifully came. That evening, I realized I knew better what Alden Leopold meant when he wrote, "For one species to mourn the death of another is a new thing under the sun." I dozed off and slept like a rock. The next morning, the doe was gone. At noon, the farmer baled the hay. The curtain had fallen on this play. The stage was cleared and the actors left. In my memory, I would save the ticket stub from my weekend with the doe, in which I learned more not only about the nature of animals, but human nature as well.
Ron Weber is a writer and forester who lives in Weyerhaeuser. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
Now to Pfizer. No, not the arena home to our beloved Milwaukee Bucks, but to Pfizer, the Brookfield-based global technology firm, roughly 44,000 employees across the world, in 2021 processed 78 billion merchant transactions. That is some scene setting courtesy of Pfizer's annual report. So join in on FinTech, on moving money in a digital world, 800-642-1234. Byron Valier is Pfizer's Chief Growth Officer. Byron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
Well, good morning. As I said, we know Pfizer of the arena, not so much Pfizer of the corporation, Pfizer of the you. So can you describe the industry and the daily work of Pfizer?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to sum it up is really by our aspiration, right, which is to move money and information in a way that moves the world. Our footprint touches probably 100% of U.S. households, about 40% of all the card swipes in the United States we process, and whether that's online or at your local 7-Eleven, we are the infrastructure provider behind that. If you pay a bill electronically, we process about 70% of the ACH transactions in the U.S., around $50 trillion. As you said, lots of payments processing goes on, but we're also a big digital provider. So for about 40% of the banks in the United States, we provide all their underlying technology, teller systems, accounting systems. But importantly for a lot of the folks that are listening to this call, a lot of that digital capability, we build that and provide that to financial institutions, both banks and credit unions. We're the number one. This is a fact that always surprises people. We are the number one publisher of apps into the Apple App Store and into the Google Android App Store. So it's a super interesting kind of technology company really focused on financial services.
I'm thinking like super yikes security oriented. I mean, in all of these platforms you're describing, as people swipe across the world, you're in the back end of this and trying to ensure that all of these transactions go down securely. What is that like to do that type of business?
Yeah, we spend a incredible amount of money on security, on cybersecurity, on resiliency, making sure that all of these systems kind of run in the background like electricity and nobody has to worry about them. You know, bad guys are constantly pinging on the doors of our systems. We have an incredible security team that we have fielded around the world that's focused on making sure that we protect, the front, the middle, and the back. And it runs everything from physical security at data centers to cybersecurity and encryption on digital platforms. But it is something that is top of mind for us, top of mind for our clients, top of mind for our regulators.
Here's something that comes to mind as you say that, and you're involved heavily in these payment operations around the world. What about pulling out of Russia? What about the U.S. sanctions and cutting off Russia's accounts and their transactions? Has that been something your company has had a hand in?
Yeah, around the edges, we didn't have a business in the Ukraine or in Russia.
Okay.
But around the edges, we do have processing businesses in Poland, which are actually performing quite well. And, there's a lot of challenges going on there domestically. And we've been more kind of evolved from a tertiary perspective that, Russian, credit cards, for instance, processed through China or some other intermediary.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been mandates from Visa and MasterCard around, making sure that we are shutting off certain financial institutions. And so, we're not directly involved in those markets, but from a secondary perspective, are making sure that we're upholding the sanctions and helping our clients, importantly, uphold the sanctions, both from the federal government as well as, mandates from the big card brands, MasterCard, Visa, American Express.
You mentioned China. How have the COVID lockdowns in China affected the fintech industry? Because China is a huge hub for financial technology services. And just frankly, the size of China and the movement of money, what do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, they have they have a digital yuan, which is a central bank digital currency, and they've kind of been pushing on that, promoted that during the Olympics. I think continues to move forward, and they have a large e-commerce presence that's going on there. a lot of that domestic, you know, financial services tech stuff doesn't impact the rest of the world. The biggest impact that we've seen within Fiserv and with our clients has been around supply chain, and it's mostly around chips. We have a product called Clover, which is a point-of-sale device. You'll see them at Fiserv Arena when you go up to pay, or you'll see people walk around with handhelds that says Clover on it. That hardware has chips in it, and we've seen supply challenges with chips just like everybody else. We're doing a lot around making sure we're finding alternate sourcing for chips. We're doing it, interestingly enough, we refurbish a lot of that equipment as well, which is good for the environment and drives reuse of components. But I think for a lot of people, this idea of reuse and making sure that you're getting everything you can out of the current kit that you have in circulation is really important.
Oh,
supply chain's been the biggest impact.
You can actually refurbish chips. You can fine-tune them, make them to work with your new systems, and not always have to use new chips or new materials.
Yeah, we typically don't pull the chips out, but we'll refurbish the equipment. And it's
okay.
A little bit like some of the programs around refurbishing iPhones. And
okay.
So, there's an entire industry around consumer electronics, refurbishing them, redeploying them. Sometimes in market, sometimes they'll get sent off to another market to be used. But there's a large industry around refurbishing consumer electronics, and I think it's because of the chip challenges, it's put even more kind of focus on that and making sure that you take advantage of all of the things that aren't being used.
So digital payments, they've soared during the pandemic. Visa saying last year that tap-to-pay transactions grew more than 30% year over year. How has that impacted your priorities and workloads and what you see going on there?
Yeah, we're very long on tap-to-pay and on digital payments. We've seen growth in both Google Pay and Apple Pay. We have more and more clients that are investing in digital payments capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a good example. We have a platform that we've released. If you were using your bank mobile banking application, or you're going to a bank and you're going to go open a new account, that account opening process more and more has become 100% digital.
Mm.
And you can take a picture of your driver's license with your phone. You then the app takes a picture of your face, and you have to blink to make sure it's not a photograph. But all of that kind of background checking, once you open that account, typically you would then wait a week and you would get a debit card in the mail. Well, today we can just automatically provision that debit card. You can get all the numbers and the security code off the back of it. We can push it into your Apple wallet or your Android wallet, and you can start using it right away. So in the span of a few minutes, you can open an account, authenticate yourself, deposit money into the account, and then get a virtual card that you could walk down to your local grocery store and go pay with it.
You mean the TV ad? Yeah, I've seen a TV ad over this. The guy's at the counter, doesn't have the money, and then you see just a little bit of finagling on the phone, and boom, the wallet works.
That's right. And there's just more and more P2P options. We're we provide a lot of the infrastructure underneath Zelle.
Okay.
And so if you want to go split a bill, you want to send half your rent to your roommate, all of that is getting easier and easier. And banking in many ways, much at a typical bank or credit union, most of the consumer and even the SMB, the small mid-sized business contact with the financial institution is digital. It's in the mobile app, it's in their online banking, it's at an ATM, right? Like the number of times you actually physically need to walk into a bank has just gone down dramatically. They're becoming, banks and financial institutions are becoming much more technology companies than they were, a couple, even just a couple of decades ago.
Wow. Byron Valier with us, Chief Growth Officer at Brookfield-based global technology firm Fiserv. Join in on FinTech in Wisconsin, merchant payments, the way our world is moving money, what you want to know about it. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Byron Valier here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about Wisconsin's business climate through the lens of Brookfield-based Fiserv, a global provider of payments and financial services tech. Join in on merchant commerce, on what it means to move money around the globe. 800-642-1234. Byron Valier is Fiserv's Chief Growth Officer with us for about seven more minutes. Let's bring in a caller now. Jim is joining us from Madison. Jim, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yeah, I was traveling in Houston, and I heard a discussion on how fast you can make an account to have a card and a credit card. So when I checked in, I gave them my driver's license, and they looked at it, but it almost looked like they scanned it while they're sitting at the desk. So I guess, is there ability for a lot of online fraud for my information now to be online, or somebody creating an account from that, just that quick trip?
Jim, thank you. Byron, what do you see there?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? And as as we started putting chips in cards, so those little EMV chips that you see on cards has reduced fraud around cards, because you don't necessarily you can't just make a new card and stick it in a card reader. So it has pushed more fraud to be virtual, online. It's called card not present fraud. Jim, what I would say is there is, the fraudsters are aggressive. I would say the folks that are battling it are even more aggressive. And so, there are things that are going on. Like if you look at doing a payment with your phone, there's actually, your phone gives off hundreds of little data points. The GPS tells you where you are. And so, the fraud systems in the background are saying, well, is Jim at a place that he is normally at? When you enter passwords, it can tell how fast you enter passwords, those types of things. So between geolocation and a lot of behavioralistic data, do you typically do those types of things? Most fraud gets caught. And so, fraud is in general still at relatively low levels. Our financial systems are quite safe. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It does happen sometimes. But there's a huge amount of energy being put into it to make sure that payments are safe and sound. And I'd say generally are keeping up with the fraudsters, actually are ahead of the fraudsters in many, many ways.
What about the rise of AI and machine learning and automation? Has that enabled you to bring more security with chips and transactions?
Well, that's exactly what's helping. So
okay. When
you think about these giant data sets, right? So on a typical day, we'll process 12,000 transactions a second. So it's enormous amounts of volume are running through these systems. And AI, machine learning, allows us to kind of understand what the patterns in those payments are and how people typically spend money, move money around. Financial institutions, banks, and credit unions are doing the same thing, right? They're spending a lot of kind of time and energy kind of understanding what's normal and what's not normal, and all the things that are kind of out of the normal bounds get flags on them. You've probably experienced, Kate, you'll spend money somewhere and you'll get a text from your card company. It will say, hey, did you spend this money? It's called out of band. But that's them in the background saying, I wonder if this is really Kate or if this is somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that, it's become a much more interactive experience versus, 5 years ago, you might have gotten a letter that arrived 30 days later saying this is an unusual transaction. Now it just happens instantly. Mm-hmm. And all of that is making it harder and harder for fraudulent transactions to get through the system.
Jim, thank you for the question. Pete now in Eau Claire. Pete, hi, go ahead.
Hey, I'm a truck driver. I'm 64 years old. And when I was young, everything was transacted with actual cash. When I started driving truck, late 70s, there was a thing called a comm check where we'd go to a truck stop and we could get a cash advance on our paycheck. So now we've got all these electronic transactions that are happening, like he just said, 12% around the world. How much money that doesn't exist is floating out there in cyberspace, because obviously 12,000 transactions a second, that, you know, you're not actually transacting cash. So how much money that doesn't, you know, physically exist in cyberspace?
Yeah, getting our arms around that digital money that's really just floating out there. What can you say about that, Byron?
Yes, it's a really interesting question, Pete. So I would say all that money, you know, really does exist in one way, shape, or form. And so if you're using a debit card, you know, the debit system understands how much, what your deposits look like. The debit network understands what your deposits are at your financial institution, your bank. And so we process that transaction. We know it's $100, and you're buying gas for $100. We know there's $100 in the account, so we approve the transaction. And then actually a hold gets put on it, and it eventually settles through the system. A similar thing happens with credit cards. Now, it's not that there's, you know, dollars sitting in your bank account with a credit card, but you have an approved level of credit at your, whoever the issuer of your card is. And so when that transaction comes through, they check against it and say, do you have, you know, credit on that credit card? Yes, you do. We approve it. That eventually then gets settled. So your credit card balance goes up, and eventually you pay that bill and it comes out of your bank account and goes there. And so the system, these networks are all built to make sure they understand kind of who's using the cards and what level are they authorized to. And then, as I mentioned earlier to Kate, you know, you may have money in your account or money on your credit card. A big transaction comes through, you buy a refrigerator at Home Depot, they'll layer another level of, so you have the money in your bank account or you have the credit, they'll layer another level of security on that and fraud check and just to make sure. And you might get a text that's saying, hey, should we approve this, you know, $2,000 purchase or not? But the systems and the networks understand, you know, what's available for payment across both debit and bank accounts at all times, and
it's the
following day. But there are, you know, billions and billions of dollars of transactions that are kind of in flight and maybe settling overnight at any one time. And, you know, these systems are built to manage all of this.
Byron, thank you for joining us.
I enjoyed it very much, Kate. Have a great day.
You too, Byron Valier, Chief Growth Officer for Fiserv. I'm Kate Archer-Kent on the Ideas Network.